Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Thomas Frank Carr. T. Frank, how you doing today besides being busy, my friend?
I'm doing well, and it's always good to be busy because it means there's interesting things happening.
There is, and for the off-season, June, busy month with recruiting. They've had visitors every weekend. I guess that's after next week. They get a little bit of a quiet period, them meaning the coaches at Penn State.
Yeah, it's not going to be quiet for anybody else. That's when all the commitments are going to happen. We've got two that are already set up, which I know we're getting to later, but yeah, it's going to be a busy week for people who a busy month for people who follow recruiting. Last year, I believe there were 13 Penn State commits.
You know what, T. Frank? In the biz, that's called a tease, right? We're going to get people to stick around for quarter number four.
Oh, yeah.
But before we get there, we're going to do one of my favorite things to discuss with T. Frank is the technical aspects of the game, not just, okay, who's the player going to play and so on, but talking about the strategies, the positions, the theories behind some of the things that are going on. We're going to do that with T. Frank. And T. Frank, what prompted this was a couple weeks ago you did an article about the wide receivers and essentially I think doing the not too big, not too small, but just right on the size of the receivers. What did you mean by that, first of all? Let's start with that.
Yeah, so I titled the article Penn State and the Goldilocks Receiver Revolution because it's exactly what you just described. It's finding guys that can do everything because they've got the perfect body type for the modern game of football. And this is, you talk about the tactics, right? You talk about the things behind the plays. What are we trying to accomplish? And those desired goals are what dictate the skills necessary on the football field, which then dictates what are you looking for? What skills? What players are you prioritizing? And just as a quick review, because this always ends up being like a history lesson, which is traditionally what everyone is used to is that you've got three different body types, essentially. You've got your primary X receiver, who is Michael Irvin. I always think of him because he had a great line of like, I've got to fight a dude to go get the football. I've got to get into a fist fight to catch a football in the middle of the air with somebody trying to knock my head off. That guy, 6'2", 6'3", 225 pounds, big physical contested catch, lots of receptions. Then you've got your slot receiver, the obvious on the other side body type. Smaller, quicker, has to run routes in multiple directions. So you're in the slot, you have what's called the two-way go. You can break either way in the middle of the football field. And then you have your other boundary receiver. Typically, again, over 6 feet tall, speed, more of a deep threat, those sort of things. Those are the basic stereotypes of receivers. But in modern football, the line is being blurred between your number one receiver and your slot receiver and your Z receiver because they've realized, offensive coordinators have realized, I can put any receiver anywhere I want for any reason. So finding guys that have the ability to play inside and outside, that's what's fueling this revolution of finding guys that have the ability to run routes in multiple directions from multiple angles, from multiple positions. It gives you unpredictability. It gives you the ability to deploy your best receiver in the slot, and you might force the defense, depending on their rules, to match up their third worst corner against your best receiver if they don't have a pure slot corner. So it's about this evolution in the game that's happening that is dictating the priority is shifting away from just finding the biggest, strongest, toughest dude with good speed towards precise speed, fluidity of movement. All those things are valued as receivers more than they were previously.
Now, where there's obvious logic to that is having receivers who are able to do multiple things. I could line them up anywhere, and if I have multiple receivers that do that, I could interchange them any amount I want. Playing devil's advocate, though, the other side of that argument would seem to be, well, if all my receivers are built the same with those with the similar skill set, and I'll say, what is that, like 6 foot, 6'1", 200 pounds? Is that what we're talking about?
So I talked to Taylor Stubblefield, the receivers coach, and he said, you know, that sweet spot, if you want to call it that, and by the way, I'll just answer that part. The sweet spot is like typically 5'11"-ish to 6'1", about 200, 205 pounds. So yes, that's the mold that is kind of the new prototype if you look at the NFL and college.
Where, again, playing devil's advocate, though, when you talk about moving the receivers around and you might create a mismatch, here's my best receiver now playing in the slot against the third-level cornerback on the opposing team. But do you lose out on that opportunity to create mismatches because I've got a receiver that's 6'4", and could go up and over people? I'll give the example, Penn State, you have Daquan Hardy, he's not the biggest guy in the world, right, playing your slot cornerback. If I could somehow, if I could move a guy into that slot who's 6'4", he may not be the fastest guy in the world or the shiftiest, but if he's 6'4", and the defender is 5'9", there's my mismatch.
Right, but you can also play a 5'11 corner there, and if he can jump 37 inches in the air, then it's relatively the same thing. That what you're pointing out there is Daquan Hardy is small. You're not pointing out that the receiver is big. You're pointing out that the corner is small. And here's the other thing. We're talking about averages. We're not talking about absolutes. And in the article, we point this out of, Taylor Stubblefield says there's no exact science here. Because if a guy can run and he can run routes, I don't care if he's 6'5 or if he's 5'10. If he can play big as if he's small, take Parker Washington, he's got a great vertical, great body control. He's got a long frame for 5'10. So he is a contested catch. He was the best contested catch player on the roster last year. And he's the smallest receiver. Malik Mega does not, so far, have a profile of a guy that's going to go moss people. He hasn't jumped over anyone to catch a bunch of contested catches. He's a speed receiver as of now. Now, we can learn more about him in the future, but it's kind of like, how do you play and what's averaging out? And this is the point, is that Penn State went from previously, and this is a kind of the canary in the coal mine for all of football, whether it's NFL or college. Penn State used to have a clear distinction between slot receivers, 5'10", 5'9", Brandon Polk being 5'8", and boundary receivers, Saeed Blacknall. I would even, again, Chris Godwin was 6'1", but he was 200 pounds, and he played like a big-bodied receiver. You had a bunch of other guys like Juwan Johnson, these Irv Charles, the kid that transferred to Florida, Justin Shorter. 6'3", 6'4", these guys that are huge, that are big physical mismatches. And now the averages are, they're all about 5'11 to 6'1". And they all have this relatively similar profile. And the bonus of that is that you don't have to say, okay, take Malik Mega, for example. He's only an X receiver. He can only play on that side of the football. Or Mitchell Tinsley. So Parker Washington didn't play a lot this spring, didn't play in the blue-white game. Mitchell Tinsley is a classic boundary receiver at Western Kentucky, but he runs the best routes. He's 6'1". He played slot receiver in lieu of Parker Washington. So this versatility means not only do you have more depth on the roster, but you can play them in more positions so more guys have the opportunity to contribute because they're not stuck behind somebody. This is all, again, just to back up and say, these are all on average. I think Penn State still has like, okay, he's mostly here. Keandre Lambert-Smith is mostly going to play this position, but he can play these other ones, and we can, through formation and motion, put him in the slot, and then he can run routes from inside the formation. So these are all you know, kind of concepts. They're not hard and fast rules, which is always the yeah, but, right? So there's always the yeah, but of, well, I need a guy that's 6'4". Those guys are still valuable. It's not saying that you won't take those guys, but the skills you're looking for have shifted from size first to speed and route running. Because in the NFL especially, they've taken away the ability for the defensive backs to contact and play with physicality down the field with the 10-yard pass interference rules. So speed has opened up the game at that level and on the college football level.
So if I understand this correctly, it sounds like it's more about the player's skill set, their capabilities, and it just so happens that those capabilities happen more often with a guy who's 6 foot than a guy who's 6'5". But if I could find the 6'5" guy who's quick, fast, could run great routes, and do all those things and have that same versatility, but he also happens to be 6'5", hey, so be it. By the way, that's the unicorn, right? That's the five-star.
Exactly. That's you're not turning down Calvin Johnson and Julio Jones. You're going to have those guys on your roster. But there's another thing, too, of this, I think this idea going back to the law of averages. There are more 6 foot one people in the world. There are more people that are 6 feet tall. So the ability to find somebody who can and this is kind of, you say it's about the skill set. It was about the skill set before, but the skill set was size. The skill set was muscle mass and density of, you know, your ability to fight off defenders. Now it's about speed and precision and your ability to turn quickly in short areas. It's easier to do that when you don't have a large frame. You can lower your center of gravity. You can make good cuts and run good routes and gain separation, which in an RPO and play action world means if you beat a guy one-on-one, you can take it the distance if you're fast enough into space. So finding guys that do that is the priority or is the goal. If you look at Ohio State, they'll have some guys that are 6'2". They'll have some guys that have big frames. But if you look at the majority of them, they're 6'1". They're all super fast. They get downfield in a hurry. They run really good routes. They're violently explosive in short areas, and they create serious problems because of their speed. That's how their offense operates, with this deep passing game that puts stress on your defense down the field. That is kind of the new norm. If you look at Alabama, same thing. They are recruiting track athletes with blazing speed to take advantage of the rules in football.
And with that said, what you also have at Alabama and at Ohio State is they are getting the cream of the crop. They are getting those 4- and 5-star guys. Just this week, I guess Ohio State got another 5-star receiver. When you're getting that kind of level of receiver, he's got all those skills. Okay, that's it for quarter number one. Great explanation, T. Frank. Next quarter, we're going to talk about the tight ends. Stick around for that.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations, we are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000. It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. I'm along with T. Frank Carr. And T. Frank, I always say this, I enjoy our conversations when you're talking about some of the more technical aspects of the game. I feel like when I talk with you, I learn something. Hopefully our listeners are learning also. In fact, have out your notebook. Take some notes here. When Professor Carr speaks, you want to be sure you listen. And by the way, next week we're going to be having a little quiz on everything he talked about this week. So you might want to take those notes and study up on everything. Right, T. Frank?
Sure. Yes. Yes. I prefer that to most people just arguing with the points I've made and saying the yeah, but arguments of like, well, these two players are 6'2". And if you're listed at 6'2", you're probably 6'1.5". Like, let's be real. Everyone's lying about that extra half inch. So, yes, I would prefer a quiz over somebody just telling me I'm wrong for 20 minutes.
You know what's funny about that, T. Frank? There's always that extra inch or so you get listed at. When I was in high school, approximately 1,000 years ago, and I wish I would have kept the program for a game where I was once listed at 6 foot tall in a program. 6 foot tall, yes. If anyone has met me, you know I'm just a tad bit shy of 6 foot tall.
My high school coach, when we were all being measured in heights and weights, and I walked into his office and I said, cleats on or off? And he said, well, do you play football in cleats? And I said, yeah. So I was 5'11". I wasn't going to complain about it. So, yeah.
Exactly.
All sports lie about their height.
Well, and again, one last funny note. Years ago, again, I played basketball in an under 6 foot league. And I swear to God, we had like four guys who were 5'11¾". So when they got measured, it was take the shoes off and slouch a little bit. Yeah, it was the only time I played on a team where we had all the big guys. Yep, that huge 5'11¾". Anyway, first segment, T. Frank, we talked about wide receivers. We talked about the position. We talked about how it might be evolving at Penn State and perhaps throughout the country. This segment, I want to talk about the tight ends a bit. And as we all know, Penn State has three, I'll say, very good tight ends. And what I want to talk to you about is what the skill sets are of each one of those guys. And what is the skill set, first of all, that the coaches are looking for? And you typically, in my head, when you talk about tight ends, you usually, especially when they come in as recruits, you either see them, this is the guy who's 6'4", 260 or so, and you think, well, he may grow into a tackle. Then you get the guy, he's 6'4", 205 coming in as a tight end, and you think, this is a glorified wide receiver, right?
So it's the fun part is that it's not one position. It's several positions, depending on your offense, and it's several different body types that all can work at the tight end position. And Penn State, I think over the last couple of years, they've had probably since they've gone to more two tight end sets, they've had a more diverse skill set at their tight end position. And I think it's pretty... It's a good example of what they have right now between the three guys they have at tight end, which is a really interesting mix.
Well, let's talk about those multiple positions. A position that we hear a lot about is the H-back. Yeah. And I remember watching some video on Mike Yurcich's Oklahoma State teams, and I think they had some cute name for it. What do they call it? The cowboy or something?
Cowboy back.
The cowboy. Which, in essence, is just in my mind, it's moving the tight end into the backfield and making him a fullback, right?
Yeah. So this is the fun part that I love about football is, like, people bemoan the death of the fullback. Fullback is not dead. And the fullback wasn't really a fullback when you were watching it. That was an offensive guard somebody lined up in the backfield because they're sadistic. In modern football, talking about receivers, you can't do just one thing. You can't be just a lead fullback. You have to be able to do multiple things because, think about it, you're giving the defense an obvious sign of what you're about to do by bringing certain positions onto the football field. If you're bringing a 6 offensive lineman set on the field, you're saying 3/4 of the time we're going to run it, and then to catch you off guard, we're going to throw a play-action pass, maybe. So when you have the H-back, it is just a fullback that you use in a variety of different ways. Some offenses call this the F as well, the F receiver. It's just a bunch of different ways of classifying a guy that's kind of a tight end that lines up in the backfield that runs crack blocks and runs lead blocks and also goes out for passes. So in Penn State's offense, the H-back is Brenton Strange. But here's, like, the interesting thing is, Brenton Strange is the, at least last year, was the number one tight end. So when there's a one tight end set, typically he's going to be on the field. And then if you go to a two tight end set, he flips to the H-back. And you have Theo Johnson, 6'6", 260 pounds, as your pure Y inline tight end. They all have different letters to signify their positions. If you follow football, you know that. But, like, that's the difference between the two body types. Of Strange is 6'3 and a half, 6'4, 248, 250 pounds, can turn and run a little bit. Little more of a athlete in the complete sense of agility and all those things to be able to bend into the hole and lead block if he needs to on counters, or he can, you know, what's called a split block in inside zone where he has to come across the formation and block out a defensive end. These are sort of the roles of that player, but if he's also the only tight end on the field and they're going to a three receiver set, then he can be either in that situation, he can be the Y or the H, depending on where he lines up. So it's just a tactical advantage of having a couple different body types at that position to use them in different ways. Now, the interesting thing is he's the best run blocker on the team, and you would think the Y tight end, the guy who is lined up on the next to the cheek of the tackle, would be your best run blocker. Theo Johnson, a former receiver, still working in that skill as a football player. So just an interesting wrinkle in that situation that the smaller guy is actually the much better run blocker.
Well, I was going to ask you that. You know, when describing the body types, you would think, if I'm putting a guy in the backfield, sort of kind of playing fullback, I want the biggest guy. But you gave a good description of Brenton Strange capabilities to show that those, you might want a little more athleticism from that guy who's going to serve as the blocking back.
Yeah.
Where does Tyler Warren fit into all this?
Very well. So, first off, I want to just say something to what you just said. Football is changing, and we have to be okay with that. So this idea that we have to have the biggest players on the football field, if it's functional, sure. But we have to get away from this idea of bigger is always better. Better is always better. So I don't, like, it doesn't matter if you're 275 pounds at defensive end. If you don't have the bend and flexibility to set the edge and rush the passer, you are not as effective as a guy that's 255, that is a reasonably good run defender, and a danger to the offense as a pass rusher. If you're a tight end and you're 275 pounds and you can't catch, you're not useful. So this notion, talk about with receivers, talk about with linebackers, if you're not functional, you're not useful. So this obsession with size that we have, that is from a time when football was a more condensed game, when everyone was running the ball 25 to 35 times a game, you can miss those days, you can yearn for those days, but you can't replicate those days. The genie's out of the bottle. And I understand in college some teams can play that way, but most of them don't. So now back to Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren is that guy. He's the guy who's 6'6", he's 250 pounds, he's a functional athlete, he is both positions. I think he can play both the H-back and the inline tight end, and his snaps last year really showed that. So his, you know, former, did you know, Jim, he's a former quarterback. But that sort of athleticism, movement skill in space, at 6 foot six, the only thing that he doesn't have, to me, is that his arm, like his reach as a run blocker, is not the same as Theo Johnson or even, really, Brenton Strange. But he's so strong, and he got stronger this offseason, apparently, where he was setting records in the weight room, for the tight end position. So he can play that H-back role. I mean, he's the Wildcat quarterback. He can play H-back, and I think he's a good enough blocker. We're going to see him develop there, where he's a good enough receiver to be that primary inline Y tight end and also a dangerous run blocker. So he's a perfect complement to the other two, but he's so good at this point, like I'm projecting a big step forward for him, that he can threaten either guy at that position. But when it comes to the receiving ability, Brenton Strange didn't bring it last year. He's got to take a step forward, or else I think that might be where he might lose some snaps to Tyler Warren.
By the way, yes, I was aware that Tyler Warren was a quarterback in high school. And that's one of the things, by the way, and I think this ties into what you've been talking about both segments today, is the Tyler Warren at his size, just to have both the athleticism to play quarterback and the instincts or the intellectual ability to play quarterback at the high school level tells you about a certain amount of athleticism from him. And yeah, that kind of leads in. I think you answered my question already, that I'm a big fan of Tyler Warren. And my question was, do you think we're going to see more of him? Brenton Strange is the guy that you think should be the H-back, and Theo Johnson is more the you know, receiver type, or put on the line of scrimmage next to the tackle. Isn't Tyler Warren, to use your vernacular from the wide receiver, isn't he the just right guy because he could move around and do both?
Yeah, yeah. And I think his frame makes him more of a Y tight end, more of that inline guy. But let's also remember that about 30% of the time, Theo Johnson split out as a wide receiver. So you can have two guys on the field, and however you want the nomenclature to be, you can have one guy lined up in the slot and one guy lined up on the end of the line of scrimmage. And that's the point of having tight ends, by the way, is that they are a threat in both the run and pass game. So you can change your play, or you can keep the defense at a disadvantage. And why this position is so important to James Franklin and Mike Yersich is they provide you this tangible flexibility from a play-calling perspective. So getting these guys to step up and play to their level, that's very important for this offense and for, you know, next year.
Very good, T. Frank. And I think we were all a little bit disappointed in the tight ends last year, considering how much ability is in that tight end room. Hopefully we'll see more from them this season. That's it for quarter number two. Stick around. Quarter number three, we've got your questions. We're going to ask T. Frank.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State-Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there!
In his book, Why Penn State, author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering old state's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results. Located right here in State College, we specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's T-E-K results.com. Or give us a call at 814-206-0000. Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante in with T. Frank Carr, and it's quarter number three. You know what that means? It's time for Ask T. Frank. This is where we have T. Frank answer your Penn State football or recruiting questions, or questions about life in general. You want to submit a question? Download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button. That's all there is to it. What's great about this segment is at the end of it, we will pick out a winning question, and that winner will receive a copy of the great book by Greg Woodman, Why Penn State? If you want to get the book on your own, it's available at whypennstate.com. You could also go to Amazon. You could find it there. It talks about Penn State in that decade of the 80s. Those of us old enough to remember that was two national championships. And that's the 80s, T. Frank. That's where Penn State really became Penn State. All right, you ready for your questions?
Yes, ready to go.
Okay, I'm going to get right to a tough one for you, T. Frank, and this is Brad from Perkasie. He says, T. Frank, on your On3 site, I started a thread to celebrate those giving to NIL with the expectation of it encouraging more people to give. Instead, 50% of the people responded on why they refuse to give. My question is, how do these people have money for all of the online sites, On3, Rivals, 24/7, we all know them, but then say they can't give a one-time donation to NIL? And yes, this is me calling them out because I'm sick of losing recruits. P.S., my in-laws live in Georgia, and they're Georgia Bulldog fans, and I hate seeing them do better than us. Sounds like a family issue going on there, T. Frank.
So yeah, what about and I don't Penn have State a cure for that last part.
get his in-laws to move in with him in Pennsylvania. That's the solution, Brad. Turn them into blue and white Penn State fans. So what about it, T. Frank? Penn State fans reluctant to give to NIL?
Yeah, and this is a problem for Penn State. This is something I wrote about last week, talking about the situation with NIL, and it's partially a tradition thing, and I don't really know, because he mentioned being at the Blue White Illustrated message board, and I interact with those people, and I interact with people that comment online, but I'm not a fan going to tailgates and getting like the pulse of the fan base. So, you know, I'm a bit limited of knowing the full scope of how all fans feel about Penn State and NIL. But when it comes to the people that are the most passionate, that Brad points out, the guys that are on all the recruiting sites getting all the intel, they want the minute-by-minute, blow-by-blow stuff. They want to have a spy cam in Lash Building to know what everything's going on at all times. Those would be the people that are most likely to donate to NIL. And there is a rift. And to me, and this is the unfortunate thing, is I think it centers around James Franklin. So my examination into this particular topic last week, I took a look at some of the comments and things that I had heard and some of the feedback I gotten from traditionalists in college football and at Penn State. And part of the problem is that Penn State's not winning. Like, win first, then we'll give you the money. And there's nothing to be excited about. If you're not excited about NIL as the opportunity, then you're not going to be excited about NIL. And that's the problem, is that if you look at the schools that are leading in NIL, and it's a very vague topic because no one's actually releasing what their collectives are doing. No one wants to give away those trade secrets. So you got to just follow the smoke. Where there's smoke, there's fire with this. So if you look at the major schools, and I'm going to throw Michigan State in here as one of the other ones, but if you look at the major schools that you hear the most about with NIL, none of them have been like a 10-win program. None of them have won 10 games. And I didn't do the, by the way, I didn't do the research on Michigan State before saying that because that literally just happened as we were talking. But none of these programs are traditionally successful. Texas A&M went 8-4 last year, then signed 6 5-star players. That's the whole, okay, what's going on here? Like something doesn't smell right with Texas A&M. Their donor base, whether they're mega donors or if they're just the average people, they are enthusiastic about NIL because it can close the gap between them and the programs that have traditionally the ensconced power, that have these entrenched advantages of being Ohio State and Alabama, being in the college football playoff, being good before all of this change happened that only accentuated their advantage. So NIL is an opportunity. And if you're looking at it as, okay, prove it to me, I need a return on my investment, then you're missing the picture. This is the secret sauce, it can be, maybe, to get your team over the top. And the problem is Penn State has not had a leader from an administrative standpoint to really push all of this stuff. Patrick Crafty takes over July 1st. That's when we're going to see, I think, a tonal shift from Penn State and NIL, but it's a full year in. Like, this has been coming, we've known about it for a while, and it's been in effect for a year. So it's a problem that Penn State is behind in, and James Franklin cannot do anything about this. Like, all he can do is what he's been doing, and it's turning people off because there's people that he's a polarizing figure as the head coach. So that's really what I've found looking into this issue, is that if you don't like James Franklin and he's the one telling you need to give, you're going to ignore him because you don't think he's a good game day coach. And I, from my examination of the landscape, that's a bad plan if you want Penn State to win.
I'm going to add on to that, T. Frank. I do think there is a large segment of the Penn State fan base who have issues with James Franklin. It seems like James Franklin's always begging for more of something. You know, more assistant coaches, more money, more facilities, and so on. So it gets a little bit old. But I'll also add this in at Penn State.
Let me just stop you right there. Sorry, let me just stop you right there. The reason he's doing that is because Penn State does not have the resources that these other programs that he's competing against have. So, like, getting the same number of assistants, he's just trying to get to the same number as everybody else. He's trying to get the same level of facilities as everybody else. Not that he's trying to get more. He's trying to get to a point where he's on the same playing field.
Well, what you also have is there's Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, you know, those elite, elite teams. And is Penn State even the best of the rest? Now, let's set that aside because that's not where I was headed with this. You know, I mentioned Greg Woodman's book, you know, Why Penn State, and it was about the 80s decade. For those of us who are old enough to remember that, and I know there's a lot of Penn State alums who are, that was back in the day when Penn State beat Miami in the Fiesta Bowl. It was good versus evil. Penn State, the reputation was success with honor, as opposed to the schools, you know, and I know I'm generalizing here a little bit, you know, down south you have the, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying kind of right. attitude. And this money was going to players anyway back when it was illegal. Now that it's legal, or when they're giving money as incentive for players to come in, it's a gray area. Maybe by the spirit of the law, you're not supposed to be doing that, but it's happening anyway. And I think Penn State fans have a bit of this holier-than-thou attitude. We don't resort to that. Yeah. That's not us. That's not success with honor. Well, the fact is, though, in this day and age, those are the rules, you know?
Right.
It's like if they implement the forward pass and allow it, you better be able to throw the ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, Penn State fans longing for those days of, you know, we're better than everybody else. We don't have to get our hands dirty.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't getting your hands dirty anymore. This is just the lay of the land. This is the way the game's played today.
I want to make sure we get to other questions, but like this is the reality is I and this is what I keep trying to tell people is the way listen to the way James Franklin talked about NIL previously. And when he's asked about, hey, is this good for football? And he basically let me summarize. I don't want to dive into this sludge, but I'm diving in head first, so come with me. Because this is the way through. And if we don't do this, we're going to be left behind. So he also, like the traditionalists in football, Nick Saban, Ryan Day, all these, Dabo Sweeney, they don't want to do this either, but this is the reality. And these guys are tasked with winning.
Exactly. And the other part to this that Penn State deals with is they're not in a big city. You know, USC is an example in Los Angeles. In Texas, you know, they have the oil barons who were just willing to throw money at things like that. In-state college, it's a little different. And what I think is difficult is Penn State, in theory, is trying to use their advantage, which is this super huge alumni base. Right. We don't need, you know, one guy giving $1 million if we could have 1 million people giving $1, you know?
Right.
The problem with that is you've got to convince so many more people to give, and that's very difficult. Let's see if we could get in at least one more question here, T. Frank. Let's see. I had something here. Which one did I want to go to? Why did I lose it? All right, let's go to Steve and Dubois. Penn State both gained and lost a commitment in the last couple weeks, gaining the player who decommitted from Rutgers and then losing a player who decommitted and went to Georgia. This seems to be happening more often. Is it, or do you have an explanation for why?
Well, I would say in Josh Miller's case, he committed pretty early in the process. And when you commit early in the process, there's just more time to be recruited by other schools. And he was a kind of an under-the-radar prospect. I loved his film. So Georgia, they found out about Josh Miller. They saw his tape. They saw his improvement in the camp circuit. He was the MVP with Samson Okunlola at a skills camp, and they offered him because I think he's a very good football player. Penn State saw it early, and they offered him. And if Georgia is the team offering you, there are very few programs where they're a better fit than Penn State. And for an offensive lineman, it's hard to say no to Georgia. With Yazeed Haynes, kind of the same thing. He blew up this offseason. He was committed to Rutgers, and you know it's this hard thing to say, to be unfair about it, but like Penn State's a better program than Rutgers. And he chose to open up his commitment, and then Penn State beat Minnesota and a couple other places in terms of Yazeed Haynes, the receiver. So it's how big of a fish are you? And this is the whole point about going back to the only thing we've talked about this segment is like NIL can change the size of your program. So are you going to be one of those feeder programs where your Pitt and your Jordan Addison goes to USC, or are you going to be USC? And you've got to make that decision because NIL is now a factor in all of this. And it's not going away unless, you know, higher powers like governing bodies get involved.
Exactly. All right. T. Frank's going to be along in quarter number 4 to talk recruiting. We'll name our winner then.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations, we are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000. We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. Quarter number four means we're going to talk recruiting. But before we do that, T. Frank, we need a winner from the Ask T. Frank segment. Who you got?
So I think we're going to go with the second question. Just kidding. Brad and Perkesy. Now that I know, I feel a little bad because now that I know he's a Lion's Den member, I'm going to try and not give him preferential treatment going forward. But we're all human. We have our own biases. But yes, no, Brad had the obvious answer and the obvious win in quarter number three.
Oh, wait a minute. This is a biased answer. I get to overrule this. Forget it, Brad. No way. T-Frank, you know, the fix was in there. Only kidding. Brad, you're our winner. I'll be getting in touch with you. All right, T-Frank, let's talk recruiting. June is a huge recruiting month. Before we get into some of the other things, I just want to mention this. We pre-record the show sometimes. So we're recording on Tuesday morning. The show is being released on Wednesday. Sometimes things happen between today and tomorrow, which is when you're probably listening to the show. Let's name a recruit who's probably going to commit, or at least we forecast it. There's a defensive end coming out of Alabama who's probably going to commit to Penn State.
Yeah, so we record Tuesday mornings, so the what's predicted for today is that four-star defensive end from Phenix City, Alabama, Tamarian Parker, is going to commit to the Nittany Lions. All the major recruiting services have put in a pick for Tamarian to end up with the Nittany Lions, and that's usually a good smoke signal that it's going to happen. And it's always the issue of, like, is it going to happen today? Is it going to happen on Wednesday? Is it? But, like, the that is the expectation is that Tamarian is going to commit to the Nittany Lions most likely on Tuesday. So if you're hearing this on Wednesday, this might be some review for you. But that is what we're expecting as of Tuesday morning.
Just a real quick capsule summary on Tamarian Parker. As we said, four-star defensive end. I'm always curious when Penn State gets a player out of someplace like Alabama. I'm going to hear from some fans who said, well, if this guy's so good, how come he's not going to Alabama?
Because he likes Penn State. I mean, this is a we'll speak from now on. We'll speak as if this is going to happen, just because that is the prediction. I trust my guy Ryan Snyder. He's excellent at this, and he was the first one to put in a pick. He always says follow the visits. That'll tell you where a guy is thinking about going. And Tamarian, living down south, visited Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee four times. He visited Ohio State three times. He's been to Penn State once, his official visit. That's according to our tracker of visits. I feel like he came one other time, but I might be wrong about that on an unofficial capacity. But, you know, that's what we have is officially tabbed. So this is a huge upset. That's what's the story. The story isn't that he's not good enough. It's that this kid is talented. He want, like, all these schools were interested in him. I mean, you look at his offer list, it's probably 30, 40 deep, and he chose Penn State. So that's a huge win and an upset, and at a position where in this recruiting cycle, Penn State was in a bit of trouble if they didn't land a guy like Tamarian Parker, because the board was very thin at this position. He was probably their last truly top-tier option at defensive end to fill out that position. So it's I cannot state this enough. This is a huge win for Penn State in this recruiting class.
And, you know, T. Frank, perhaps I was critical of James Franklin and how he's looking to always looking for something more, more, more. But I think it really says something about James Franklin as a recruiter. If you're saying, you know, Penn State, as we talked about, is a little behind on NIL, they're still recruiting very well, and it shows you what James Franklin can do when he gets a player to visit.
Okay. And he's allowed
he
to go see them.
He gets a kid on campus.
let's say what it was for the last 2 years as well. James Franklin is a charismatic person who players like. Lots of people like James Franklin. Lots of recruits, lots of family members. They like James and the staff. And this is another win of, you know, you want to bemoan James Franklin's public negotiations with his contract. Having John Scott Jr. as your defensive line coach, who, you know, was at South Carolina. He's got ties to the South. Manny Diaz is your defensive coordinator, doing a great job as a recruiter in Florida as well. You know, along with Jaywan Sider and all the regional recruiters. They've got a really good staff. That doesn't happen unless James Franklin negotiates that contract to get them a pay raise for the pool for assistance and more support for the program. These things are all connected. It's not just all about the numbers you see about James Franklin. It's about the whole process. So having these things in place, having John Scott Jr., who if you now go back for the last three recruiting cycles, if you include Damian Robinson as transferring from Maryland, they have a top 100 pass rusher in the recruiting rankings and top 100 player in the nation at edge defender in the last three cycles. Damian Robinson, the number two, I think it was, defensive end in the class of 2022 in Denai Dennis Sutton and now Tamarian Parker. That is elite-level recruiting at that position. So Penn State being able to do this, it all ties together, but this is a huge win for John Scott Jr. as well. So the staff being able to recruit nationally when it doesn't work out in your region and you can't get some guys like, Mason Robinson, who was a surprise commit to Northwestern, and when that was maybe where you were going to go, these are all huge wins for James Franklin and the staff.
Very much so, and Manny Diaz also on the defensive side. Let's go to another guy who was an official commit, and that is Tyreek Blanding. He's out of New York, and he committed last week to Penn State. Give us the quick scouting report on him, T. Frank.
6'2", 265 is what he listed during his official visit. Right in line with everything that Penn State has been doing at defensive tackle at that three technique position. He's a very athletic player. He is great mobile, movement skills, can set the edge well, plays well. He also plays inside and outside for Christ the King High School in Queens. So he plays defensive tackle a little bit already. So he's got that kind of taken on double teams, knows how to work on the interior, but needs to get bigger. Good length. I think he can get near 295 pounds because Kaziah Izzard is a fair comparison. Maybe Izzard was a little bit thicker, a little bit bigger, but I think maybe if you look at Blanding and his physical dominance at his particular level, there's individually great players in that New York City league, but maybe not overall teams that are the same that I think it was DeMatha that Izzard played at in high school. But he dominates. You know, Blanding dominates the competition. He's got great length, great power, great pad level. And his first step, that first fire off the line of scrimmage, I'm a stickler for pad level because it unlocks everything. It unlocks your power. It unlocks your speed and your leverage, whether you're an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. And he has elite pad level, better than anyone else that Penn State has in this class, maybe outside of Mega Barnwell. And that plus his quickness and that power potential, that'd be the last thing, that he's strong right now, but that obviously needs to grow exponentially as he grows into a defensive tackle. I think that can unlock a next level for Blanding. So he's a three-star on the edge of a four-star in the on-three system, and I think that he can be a guy that kind of outplays that. Now, that's always the question. Does he develop? Does he grow? And does that strength and that natural violence translate to the next level? How well that happens will determine how successful he is From a physical standpoint, the mental standpoint, all those things also have to work themselves out as far as learning the game of football, being a student of the game, elite preparation, all those things.
Let's talk running backs for a moment. It appears London Montgomery, he's the running back from Scranton.
Mm-hmm.
He's really escalated himself, it appears. He didn't get an offer from Penn State until a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems like he's really in demand at Penn State. And Treyon Webb is the other name that we're hearing. Do you have a feel for those two guys?
Yeah.
And is there any chance Penn State takes two running backs?
So I would advise against it just because of the other places in this class that I think Penn State should take players. There's a lot of talent at that safety position. The secondary in general, because I think it's going to work itself out where some of these guys are moving positions. But they have a great chance at... I did a mock class a couple weeks ago. I think I gave him five defensive backs. Four safeties, I think, is the right number. But six total in this, if you include corners, is important. I think would be a good number. And then defensive line, now that you got to Marion Parker, you still want to get another defensive tackle in this class. I think you can still go after some of these elite interior players, Derek LeBlanc, Jason Moore. So you're going to have five there. And I just think that receiver, you might want to add another guy. So running back, I would go one after going two last season. And more to the point, like I like London Montgomery's game, and I've got some concerns about Treyon Webb. I think he's a little stiff. I think he's a little he lacks agility, and for being as big as he is, I don't know that he breaks tackles the way I like. And despite being 5'10", 188, London Montgomery breaks tackles. He's got great contact balance. He's got that natural feel of how to roll off of things and get extra yards. Now, he's obviously smaller than any Penn State back in recent memory, but when you've got the guys you've got in the backfield now, and I know that the transfer portal is always an opportunity for people to leave, but I think he's a good complement, and more importantly, he's a good football player. To me, he's the better of the two, so if I'm forced to take one there, I would be taking Montgomery because I think he's got all-around skill set that will help you, even if he's not 6'195".
You mentioned safeties in that answer. Two names I want to ask you about, Dakari Nelson and King Mack. Interesting, each of them for different reasons. Dakari Nelson, another guy, and he's 6'3", safety. That's nice size.
Yeah.
He's also out of Alabama. And King Mack, what's interesting is he's from St. Aquinas in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where his safety teammate there, Conrad Hussey, has already committed to Penn State. First of all, what kind of defensive backfield does that school have? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But both fascinating players. What are you hearing about those two players, T. Frank?
So that's really what I'm talking about here when I think they can take a lot of secondary players. Because, again, remember, if we're looking specifically at Manny Diaz's defensive scheme, that striker position is Jonathan Sutherland and Dominic DeLuca, two former safeties that are now playing linebacker. So I'm looking at what sort of safety hybrid blend is there in this class, and I get excited thinking about positional versatility with Dakari Nelson and with Cam Seldon, two big safety prospects that I think can play that striker position. And for what he is, 5'9", 172 pounds, I freaking love watching King Mack play football. That dude is a safety. Like, I know that a lot of people think he's a slot corner. I think he can play there. He's a Swiss Army knife that can play a lot of different positions because he's tenacious in run defense, he punches above his weight, and he's got elite movement skills. So I think you can take all three of those guys, plus Hussey, and another corner.
Very good. Plus, I keep saying it, King Mack, he's got a five-star name. He got to be a star with that name. All right, T. Frank, that's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State-Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there!
In his book, Why Penn State? Author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering old state's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results. Located right here in State College, we specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEK results.com. Or give us a call at 814-206-0000.